Welcome to the Together Podcast, powered by Xponential. The Together Podcast series highlights critical conversations on how church leaders can pursue the great collaboration together. We are all very familiar with the Great Commission and the challenge to go. There has been much taught on the Great Commandment and the need to go with love, but is it possible we've missed another great that Jesus also gave us? It's the Great Collaboration, calling us to go in love together. In this podcast, Xponential continues the multiplication conversation with a focus on the importance of collaboration, coming together as a body of believers to fulfill the mission of Jesus. Imagine the impact if North American churches came together to accomplish Jesus's mission. This podcast series focuses on five areas the church can come together on to accomplish true kingdom multiplication. And now, here's your host, Dave Ferguson.
I want to thank you for joining us today for the Xponential Podcast. I'm Dave Ferguson, president of the Xponential Conference, and I'm excited to be talking about what collaboration and unity look like in our churches. And I can't wait for you to meet our guest today, Pastor Michael Carrion. Michael serves as the senior and planting pastor of Promised Land Covenant Church in the North and South Bronx. Working together, Promised Land has planted, I think, at least seven churches now across the Bronx. He's also the vice president of church planning and development for Redeemer Church's City to City Network. And in this role, he recruits and trains church planters in the Bronx, Brooklyn, Staten Island, and Queens. And I don't have to tell you guys, you know, he knows church planning, he knows reproduction. And Michael, thanks so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Dave. Appreciate it. Honored to be here.
Hey, I just wanted to kind of start with, first of all, we're thrilled about having you join us at the Xponential Conference this year. And we got you speaking to the third session on Together as a Church. We were just talking about some of the things we're going to cover from John 17 and what that looks like. But I'd love to back way up a little bit and just let our listeners know kind of your story and back it way up to when did you know, I mean, that you really needed Jesus in your life? Give us a little bit of background on that.
Wow. Well, you know, that's an interesting story, Dave. I am a Teen Challenge graduate, and Teen Challenge is a ministry started by the late David Wilkerson and Nikki Cruz. I knew I needed Jesus when I was 17 years old under a staircase, caught an addiction. It was a cold night, and I just looked up to the sky. It was raining, and I said, you know, I can't do this. I'm going to die here. And that was the day I was like, I just owned it. I was just lost. I'd come from a very broken family of addiction historically. And I had a friend that had a connection that was a believer, was on fire for Jesus. And he said, Mike, I can't let you die here. And I said, I don't want to die here. Can you please help me, David? And his name is David Velasquez. And he took me to Teen Challenge. And that's when I just really, I really had this transformation conversion experience. And I found out that I was loved. I was not abandoned by God. That even though my family was broken, there was a lot of family members waiting to meet me in the kingdom of God. And so it was in a moment of utter brokenness, depravity. I was alone, and I was 17, and I probably would have died right there in Spanish Harlem if I didn't look up and just say, I just can't do this anymore. I just can't. I had already lost everything, and life hadn't started yet. I just thank God for someone who was on fire enough to take me to somebody that could help me, and that was Teen Challenge and the church.
What was it? What was it that happened in Teen Challenge that really was going like, okay, I need to, man, I need to take this, maybe take a look at this God thing seriously and who this person Jesus was. I mean, what was the experience there?
The experience was a little interesting coming in. I was not a church person. I was very, very, I was in the streets. I was, you know, think about New York City in the 80s and in the Spanish Harlem. So I came in with a real sort of like prison type mentality. What really, really moved, shifted me was the diversity of different pastors who had gone, who are now pastors, but who were once themselves lost in a life of addiction and drugs, former imprisonment. And these guys were all gladiators who had been literally pulled out of death's path by the skin of their teeth, had accepted Jesus, and were now dedicating the rest of their lives to getting other people off the street. And so the collaboration, there was people that were African-American, Latino, Caucasian, Asian. It was just a divide. You could see that addiction wasn't just a black thing right. or a Spanish thing. It was a people thing.
Right.
And I think that was the most influential that I felt like I could relate, and that it wasn't just me in that pocket. And because I felt safe, I could start to lay down some of those guards from the scars. Because scars, you build walls when you've been hurt by people, circumstances, historically. And so when I could relate to other people's pain, them surviving the pain, them grasping at Jesus, and then them being able to say, I'm alive today because Jesus is faithful. I drank that like it was soup, like it was water, you know? And so right. That was it. That was it. When I saw that there was others like me and that I could fit in and I wasn't alone, it was influential because I had felt all alone before that. And now I knew I wasn't. I had brothers. I had people that could walk with me.
That's awesome. I mean, that's just a great reminder. I mean, for me and for everybody listening to, I mean, just think, I mean, that one person that you're reaching out to who you might be thinking, okay, I'm doing them a big favor. I mean, it might be a 17-year-old kid who's going to go ahead and lead a great church and plant a whole bunch of other churches and then lead church. I mean, you just never know how God might use. And I mean, look, I mean, it is. I mean, I know you're so grateful for how God's used you, but how cool for, like, what'd you say the guy's name was? Dave Velasquez?
Yeah, Dave Velasquez.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that may, what he did there, that may have been the most important work of his life in giving you that opportunity to meet Jesus and find kind of a kingdom vision.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you, well, then, so fast forward then. So, like, at what point did you feel then, like, going, like, oh, you know, this isn't just kind of like something that's going to save me. I need to be full-time engaged in this, helping other people experience this. Your call, yeah, so, your call to ministry.
Yeah, so I found that I was called to ministry. The director of the program at that year, which was 1993, was Jerome. Mr. Jerome. Jerome's wife was pregnant. Jerome was having a baby. He was running out of the leadership center. And at that time, well, the whole time I was there, I was a librarian. I don't know how I wound up as a librarian.
Okay, how old are you?
600 men on this.
How old are you at this time?
At this time, I was 19 years old.
Okay, 19-year-old librarian.
I'm the 19-year-old librarian in charge of thousands of books, right? And but they were training me, what have you. And so Jerome says, look, my wife's giving birth. I need you to cover chapter 1 of Colossians, right, while I go. And so I said, Jerome, I'm a student here. There's no way I could cover that class. He says, Michael, you prepared the class. At that time, my responsibility was to help prepare the class, the outline, the syllabus, the syllabi for all 15 pastors who were really adjunct pastors from Valley Forge in Pennsylvania, because we were in Rearsburg. And so whenever these guys had a new class, they would bring the outline to me. I would do their research, get the text, put it together. And so, like, the whole time, God was training me in how to, like, you know, serve. And then so then Jerome says, I got to go. My wife's giving birth. Go just cover the class. Dave, I walk into this class, right? And I just start to talk about the outline and the supremacy of Christ, just you know, from memory. And the 45 men that were there raising their hands, asking questions, hey, Pastor Mike. I was saying, no, I'm not a pastor. I'm a student. And after that class, they said, you're going to be a great teaching pastor one day. And that just blew me away. And it was there at that moment that I was like, and when Jerome came back, the feedback he got is like, oh, you're going to have the new pastor come in and teach more classes. And Jerome says, hey, brother, you got a calling. And I said, yeah, I think I do have a calling to teach and preach. And so after that, I joined the prison team, and we preached and we taught and we did dramas throughout all the prisons in Pennsylvania. And that ministry just grew. Next thing you know, I was a student teacher. I was speaking in Alpha Dorm, Omega Dorm, which is the beginning of the ends of the program, speaking in chapel as a student. I was a student, and I was one of the youngest students, because while it was called Teen Challenge, there were very few teenagers in the program at that point. And so it was there that I really found that. So when I graduated at the end of 93, I knew I had a call. I knew that God's hand was on me. I knew that I had a responsibility, the same way other people had embraced me and said, you're not alone, to go tell other people that they weren't alone either. And so that was it. And then I wound up in the South Bronx.
I didn't even know that part of the story. That is awesome. I mean,
yeah.
I wish I would have known this when I was writing Hero Maker. I would have had you as one of the chapters. I mean, because think of it. Like, Dave, like, gave, you know, he saw something in you, right, yeah. and brought you really to Christ. And then Jerome, yeah. it's like, yeah. I mean, that's a pretty short-lived apprenticeship. But still, and he's like, yeah. go get him, buddy. But then those guys in the class and even Jerome, they have one of those what we call I see in you. Kind of like, hey,
yeah.
There's something I see in you that you never saw in yourself. And you got to.
That's right.
And then pretty soon, I mean, a little while later, there's a commissioning. Okay, go get them. So then after that, and this is where I'm more familiar with your story. Because so then after that, then you kind of, I don't know how I'd say it. You'll say it better than me. You kind of accidentally planted a church.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's right. Accidentally. So then I graduate Teen Challenge. Fast forward, make this a real shorter catechism, right? I graduate Teen Challenge. I come home. I meet this guy, and then I serve in this ministry for 12 years and start helping plant churches in Central America. But I was never the planter. I was there witnessing, supporting, sort of like a resident going between Guatemala and New York City with the Latin American Council of Churches. And so fast forward that, after 12 years, I gravitate toward a church. And I become the assistant pastor in that church. Church was blowing up, the Assemblies of God Church. And then I wind up taking a position as the executive director of a ministry that I didn't even know David Wilkerson had launched. And I was on the board. Check this out. I was on the board. And then the executive director is articulating all of these organizational issues. And because, by God's grace, I had seen a lot of transformative work on the national circuit, having graduated the whole Goodwill experience and became a nonprofit national consultant. I start to coach the executive director and say, well, if you do this and if you do that, and da, da, da. And she said, yeah. I said, you know, if I worked there, I can fix it. I'm not sure if you could unpack what I'm saying. So she says to me, well, then why don't you work here? And I was like, well, you know, maybe let me pray about that.
Yeah.
I wound up accepting that position and leaving a six-figure salary to work for $200 a week, no benefits. My wife thought I was nuts. And I find out on the first week of the job that this was a ministry that was side-birthed, Teen Challenge, and then the Christian Urban Renewal Project, which then turns into Secrets Christian Fellowships, which then turns into Urban Youth Alliance.
Right.
So long story short, I'm reading the historical manual, you know, the book, whatever that they put out, and I said, this is a David Wilkerson ministry. And the executive director said, yeah. I'm a child of David Wilkerson,
right.
You know? And so then I said, well, let's go back to what it was Missio Dei originally for this ministry. It was an advocacy ministry. It was evangelism in the hardest, most broken parts of the city. And so, hey, that's my language. I'm all in for that. And then we started to reach these kids that were coming back from prison. Because, you know, that's what David Wilkerson did.
Yeah.
He was doing social justice reform and alternative to incarcerations before it was even a term within the industry.
Right.
Advocating for kids that were strung out on heroin in the 60s.
Awesome.
One of them being Nicky Cruz. So then he turns around and he does this big movement. We go back to that same vision. Now all of these adjudicated youth that are gangbangers, strung out on drugs, caught up in the scene, I mean, abandoned, you know, dealing with mental health issues, they start coming to the ministry office and we start sending them out to our partners, the churches. Well, that was short-lived because the churches are saying, these kids are too jacked up. Don't send me no more of these kids.
Hold on. What happened?
So we started to send all these kids
yeah.
that were coming from the juvenile detention centers to the 45 denominations that partnered with us.
Yeah, so they'd have a church. So they'd have a church home.
Say again? Yeah, so they'd have a church home.
Right.
That's right. So that they could integrate back into society, find community, find fellowship, find a family, which is what got them in prison. The disconnection.
Yeah.
We sent them to these churches. The churches sent them back. They said, we can't, these kids are too broken. But you're the church.
Seriously.
You know what I mean? Like.
Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah. But I'm just still, I mean, it's stunning.
Yeah. Yeah. And so anyway, they had a hard time with that. So then this one kid comes up to me, tears in his eyes. The gangbanger says, you know, Pastor Mike, he says, why can't this be our church? And I said, listen, bro, we are not a church. I wish I could, you know, and I went home and I spoke to my wife about it. And she's, you know, she's like frying beans or something like that, a pork chop. And I'm saying, I said, I feel so convicted. This is brokenness. And then she says, well, obviously God is calling you to plant a church. That's got to be a church there. And so I went back and I spoke to somebody else, and my the development director, and he had the same conviction. So we said, let's start this chapel. This chapel can be at least an intermediate space where they come into, you know, beloved community, let them get deconstructed in the experience. We start, you know, starting some baseline theological training, Bible Institute, what have you. So that chapel, we launched that. It gets so packed out that we have to move it into the foyer. The foyer is about 5,000-6,000 square feet. We do that twice. It gets so packed out. We start saying, this is something that God's doing because there's too many people here and we don't know any of them. And what happened was these kids started to tell their friends, hey, I just came home from jail, but there's a church that helps people like us. Those kids started to tell their grandparents and their parents. Those parents and grandparents and family members started to come with their kids. So now we've That's got awesome. These families that are just popping up all over the place. All we wanted to do was help a kid not recidivate, not go back to jail, and to have the full experience with Jesus, a new life. That was always the mission. We wound up planting a formal church in 2005. And then from there, we start to say, how can we be more intentional, more incarnational? We then plant a church in a juvenile detention center with the permission of the state of New York. We plant two of those in the hardest detention centers in New York City. And then we say, well, we got a lot of drug addiction happening. How do we deal with that? Then we planted in the largest drug program in the Bronx called Promesa, which is funded by Acacia, which is like a nonprofit advocacy movement here in the Northeast. That erupts. And then next thing you know, we're doing five services just in Promesa for their juveniles, for their hospice program. And David, literally, we are preaching Jesus on a Wednesday night. And by Thursday, half the room that we've been preaching to has passed on to go be with the Lord. There, wow. When we started to see that sort of thing happening, we said, God has literally dropped us into critical missionary situations and contexts. And this is to be trusted with the last few hours of somebody's life and to share the gospel of Jesus Christ, all because we just wanted to start a chapel service, all because we just didn't want another kid to go to jail. And then the people that started graduating Promesa and graduating and not recidivating became members of the church and then became the leaders of the church. So now you've got these homegrown gladiators that are no longer piping and banging. They're now preaching and teaching.
There you go.
You don't get more biblical than that, right?
No.
So then we plant another church, an H2O partnership in Orlando, another church in Maryland. Then we plant, we commission a hip-hop church, comes out of us, a different type of urban mission. We bless it, we pray for it, we release it. And then we plant in the Bronx again, and continuing. Up until this point, last 16 years of this, I've been the general overseer and so on and so forth. I just officially, and now formally the general overseer, and that's it. So my full-time ministry now is VP of church planting. And we're getting a lot of church plant prospects from the marginalized sections of the city, because there's a lot of cats that are coming out, male and female, that are finding Jesus or allowing Jesus to finally embrace them.
Okay, and I'll tell you what, I want to jump in here real quick, because what our listeners are hearing right there too. Michael at Exponential, and this is why we got him speaking there, he's going to talk even more about what it was like planting that church, how that was a multi-ethnic, multi,
oh, yeah.
You can give me all the multis that it was.
It's multidimensional. Yeah.
You got it. Kind of church. And really kind of articulate exactly what that looked like. And I think you're going to be really inspired to hear more about that. So now all of a sudden you find yourself, you're working for City to City. You're one of the VPs there. You've got this burning passion now for multiplication, for church planting, because what you're finding is it's reaching fundamentally more people just like you were as a kid.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit, what are you doing? What is going on in your role with City to City? And maybe I think most of our listeners probably are familiar somewhat, but give us just a 30-second background on City to City.
Sure. City to City was started by Dr. Tim Keller, who's the founder and planter for the Redeemer Presbyterian Movement in New York City. Church of almost 10,000 members across the city, diverse. Focused primarily in Center Church. City to City is birthed out of Redeemer, and it is the trans-denominational non-parachurch to help build, serve global cities I mean, literally across the spectrum of the globe. And our job is that we prayerfully, discernibly train leaders and church planters in how to plant healthy missional churches. And so City to City for years has been focused on center church, focused on the, you know, upper echelon. Where is the most movement, catalytic movement? Where are the movement thinkers in culture? And a lot of times that's been focused on just the borough of Manhattan because it's the more economically affluent and so on. But we have, over the last 3 years, last 7 years, made a shift to not just focus on the more affluent borough, but have now reached to the margins. So there's a context of Missio Dei within the center, very influential, very powerful. We're never going to leave that. That's always going to be part of what we do at City to City. But we believe, when you look at the text, that revival, Jesus himself incarnates from the margins. Revival comes from the margins to the center of Rome, first century. We have now shifted all of our programs and started forming networks, organic indigenous networks, one in every borough. There's one in Brooklyn, one in Manhattan, one in the Bronx, where we are reaching and honoring the indigenous leadership, their years of experience, and then allow and fine-tuning that as we come together. So we have multiple denominations gathering once in every borough. And in that context, they're learning, what does it mean to plant a healthy missional church? And what does it mean to be in collaboration in a network? And what does it mean to preach Jesus and to look at secondary theological issues as not the main issue, but in coming together, being one holy Catholic church?
That's
so
awesome.
The phenomenon now, it used to be just a PCA movement.
Right.
The phenomenon now is that we've got Assemblies of God, Southern Baptist, Foursquare, Vineyard, Church of God in Christ, other Baptist independent progressive conventions, all coming together, sitting together, learning together, and understanding what does missiology look like in their context from the margins. And Dave, when I tell you, we're looking at and seeing the hand of God do a work that none of us can do. We're in awe.
Yep.
Because you've got the elite with the indigenous practitioner who doesn't have access to higher theological education, but has an intuitive grace that has been able to be successful, right? Then you've got the elite who've had the money, the funding, the exposure, the education, but not had the same success,
right?
And reaching and transforming and really diversifying ministry. When you get those two realities that have been unfortunately historically polarized together, you start to see God pull things down, put things in. And so City to City now is moving and shifting from individual support because, you know, we've learned this in our global efforts that no planter can be an island unto themselves, that may be short-term success, but the success and the future of church planting is collaboration. We cannot do it by ourselves. We need other influence and other voices to mold us.
No. This is great stuff because I think what you're punctuating is exactly our theme this coming year at Exponential, the great collaboration that we're better together. Me and you've had conversations over the last year. I think we were together in New York and together in Chicago too. And it sounds like the same thing that City to City is learning is what New Thing's also learning, that sometimes when you hear the word network, you only think of like one giant thing. But what we're really saying is, no, we have these are, it's actually composed now. Like New Thing, I think we're up to, I don't know, what, 140 some networks globally, but they're actually small indigenous little networks that are then being supported by this the macro expression. But I love the way you articulated it too, how it is mutually beneficial for all parties. And
absolutely.
And it's not just a hold hands, sing kumbaya, doesn't this feel good kind of thing. No, it's mission critical. If we by doing this together, we benefit and we advance the mission. So good.
Absolutely.
I was already pumped about having you speak. I'm getting a little adrenaline rush, you know, just talking to you right now.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited, boy. I'm going to tell you, there's nothing like seeing somebody have this epiphany in one of our IBCs. I've planted a church. I've been preaching for 10 years, but it hasn't been the gospel. It's been what I've learned orally from my tradition or from my denomination or from my, and they start to look at the text differently. They start to look at the church differently. They start looking at their communities differently. And we start to see walls fall down. That is an act of God. You cannot negotiate, or force
yep.
collaboration. It's when the spirit's in the center. It's when we're focusing on Jesus and him in us and molding us and shaping us and allowing our agendas to slip out and his agenda to be the premier narrative and document. We're seeing God do something in New York City. And now we're influencing other cities. So now I just came back from Cuba.
Nice.
Now I just came back from Dominican Republic. Now we're looking at Brazil. Now we're looking at
dude. We need to be working together in Brazil.
Oh, absolutely.
Seriously, we got some great stuff happening down there. And actually, one of the people that we're working with down there was actually originally planted by City to City. You know the folks at CTPI?
Okay. I don't know them, but okay.
Because we got
we'll connect.
All right,
we're excited. I'm gonna tell you, City to City is excited to work with new things. For us in 2020, that's what's on the horizon. We take a posture of student, so we can learn from each other. We're not trying to dictate. We want to support networks. We want to resource, support, train, empower, and then release leaders.
See, I think
into networks.
One of the things I love about the opportunity to have these kind of podcasts is I don't think some church planters or even folks in local church realize kind of what's happening with some of the networks. So like the last podcast I did, or two ago, I did with Greg Surratt. And of course, Greg leads the ARC. And so like now, we have, New Thing has a team in Pakistan that is working together with ARC, okay, to help start reproducing networks of churches. And and I love Greg. He's awesome. There's things that we differ on, but I love that guy. And I love what you guys are doing, and I love you, and I love City
Absolutely.
To City. And I think people think we're more territorial than – I think all that stuff's going away.
Yeah. No, and I'm going to tell you something. The fact that it's going away shows that we're in a different space in the age of the church where we are. It needs to go away, Dave. If we're going to see the kingdom realized, and we are living – You say you've used the term, and I'm going to steal the term, and I'm going to preach it.
Please do.
Mission critical. It is mission critical, Dave, that we infect the rest of the parts of the globe with this desire to collaborate, to develop networks that are intentionally mutually beneficial, mutually educating, to allow a multidimensional river to flow.
Yep.
That nobody can take credit for. To
right.
God be the glory
Except
for what he
God.
Does in his church. That's right. To God be the glory. And so when you start to surrender and you start to see that, but the times that we're in call for it. Like never before, the church needs to come together. White, black, brown, all of us. When the trumpet sounds, I don't care what your eschatology is, when the trumpet sounds, there's not going to be a reform section.
That's
right.
There's
not going to be a full gospel Pentecostal. There's not going to be a Southern Baptist convention, or there's going to be the church that gets caught up in glory to meet our King. And I want to be a part of that church.
Okay. Here's what I want you to do. We're going to wrap this thing up. I want you to just take 1 minute here. And I want you, we got some church planters listening. We got some people that are thinking about planting churches, or they're helping other people plant churches. Give them your 1 minute coaching on kind of this whole idea of collaboration better. What should they be thinking? What should they be doing? What should they be even feeling? Go ahead and just 1 minute on that one. Go.
The most prolific advice I have learned in the last 30 years of ministry has been always enter into a situation from the posture of student. Do not come in bearing your theological, historical formation. Come in and seek first to understand and allow God to train you, educate you, and shift your paradigm through the other. We are so arrogant in the West that we want to be heard, but we don't want to listen. The most profound, listen, learn, submit, be a partner with. Don't try to dictate. Jesus is the only hero. They don't even need to know your name. Just submit, surrender, follow, be a disciple. That doesn't mean that you don't have boundaries or doctrine, or doesn't mean that you don't have an ecclesial. You know, there's some non-negotiables. Everybody has those. But take a posture to seek first to understand, then make yourself understood.
All right.
That'll be my 1 minute.
Thank you. All right, Michael.
Thank
tell you, I love every chance we get a chance to be together, and I love your passion.
Thank
and
you.
I'm really pumped about having you at this year's Exponential Conference. I look forward to both myself hearing you, but also letting all our friends. You know, I think if we're not sold out, we're almost right there now, and
it's just gonna
be a great time together. So, this is
thank
Dave
you.
Ferguson and Michael Carrion, and thank you for joining us for the Exponential Podcast.
Want to go deeper into this great collaboration conversation? If so, check out the Together Resource Library. This free resource library gives you access to dozens of articles, 10-plus videos from Dave Ferguson and Patrick O'Connell, access to the free Together training kit, free ebooks, and many more free resources. You can check out this vast library for collaboration at exponential.org/together-resources/.